So, Noelle, why don't you tell us how Come and Rest got its start?
We started late 2011. Josh, the bass player, and Daniel, the guitar player, they started writing songs on their own, and they wanted to start a band, so they found me, and then quickly after found Mitchell, the drummer, and we just started writing music. We released our first EP, Royal Blood, in 2012, and then started going from there, man.
Man, now how did you come up with that name, Come and Rest? Because it's kind of unique.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. We actually released Royal Blood in 2013.
Sorry, oh, okay. No problem.
The Come and Rest, it's originated from a Bible verse. It was actually Daniel and Mitchell. Like, we were just like, after a practice, we're at a Wendy's. And we were just playing around with names, like horrible, horrible names. some bad stuff. I don't even remember. There's bad. And I believe we were sharing Frosties through these ideas. And Daniel came up with Come and Rest, and Mitchell. Well, Daniel came up with the Bible verse. And then Mitchell was like, oh, what about Come and Rest? And I was like, okay, that's kind of weird for a metal band, but I guess it can work. Then later on, it morphed into more of a kind of like a safe haven just for us and for people who like the band to express themselves and just kind of be free and to rest on the band and its music for freedom, I guess. Yeah.
Now, with it being from a Bible verse, do you guys consider yourself a Christian band or at all? Or?
Yeah, I knew that was going to come up. Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can hear you.
We're not a Christian band. We actually don't really believe in the word Christian band. But we are Christians. That is our personal belief. So we don't want to be pigeonholed into that just because, you know, our life, you know, is part of a growing process, you know. So it doesn't just have to be talked about.
It's one facet of many, is what you're saying.
It's one facet of many, man. It's just we don't just want to talk about that because that's not all that we're about, you know. It's not all about us, you know. So we don't like to be pigeonholed into that category.
Okay, so Noelle, tell us about Blacklist EP. How did you come up with the music?
Yeah, so we were all kind of going through some really rough times during the writing process of Blacklist, you know. We, for some reason, life was just kind of like, hey, all of you guys are going to go through a really tough time, so figure something out. So we ended up just coming together, and it kind of brought us to this point where we're like, listen, we want to write angry music. I want to be angry and let go of all these things that are happening. So we did some pre-production and just started writing down riffs. Daniel came up with some great riffs, and song structure was like of utmost importance for this record. So we definitely wanted to just write really good songs, you know, not just good parts, but just good songs. And I feel like we did that. So pre-production definitely helped us out, and just letting go and having this negative vibe that we all had together brought us to the point where hopefully we made pretty good music.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get the actual sound of the album? Because the sound is just full on slot heavy. It actually kind of reminds me of what I would have said years ago is what And Justice for All should have sounded like with the bass. How did you get that sound?
Well, we are huge fans of European metalcore. We love the balls that they have, man. They just They're not afraid to try things. They're not afraid. They're not afraid to just be heavy and just a juggernaut of noise. Like they don't really care about that. So we wanted to have that type of vibe with our record too. Bands like Bosch, Beats, Architects. I mean, North Lane is part of that too. I mean, they're from Australia, but you know, just vibes like that we wanted to have in the record, and we definitely took influence from that, and we hopefully we got that. You know, we didn't want the whole this is a heavy part, and then we're gonna do a really nice clean chorus for you, so we can get more people to like us. You know, I took it upon myself to be like, I'm angry right now, so if I'm going to be singing, I'm going to be yelling out of anger. And so that's what it came about. There's a purpose for everything in that album, and hopefully that stands out.
Yeah, it does. It does, totally. And I get what you're saying, too. I mean, and I sense that as well. Like, what you're calling about, where you're talking about where you didn't want to, like, have a hook in it, basically, to where that would appeal to the masses. Like yeah. I kind of use the term going stock, you know, where it started, okay. You know, where everything starts going stock. And, and I noticed that you didn't do that. Like where I thought you would turn left, you turned right a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I'm talking a lot of times. You know,
right.
Like, you know, because, like, you know how, like, you hear a song the first time you hear it and you kind of guess where it's going to go next, like the chord progression or.
Exactly, or yeah.
Yeah. You didn't do that. And you know, I totally applaud you for it, because it keeps the listener entertained. It doesn't make it so that it turns into background music.
Yeah, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Like I said, man, we song structure was super important for us, you know, and, we definitely wanted to just try different things, and we went where the song wanted to go. You know, there's a lot of times where we got stuck, you know, and we were like, I don't know where to go from here. So then we just played back the song, and we were just like, listen, just do something. You know, something's going to come out, you know, and we messed around, and we were like, that, just do that. You know, I told Daniel, do that, like, record that, you know, and that's what happens, you know. And same thing with the lyrics and with the melodies. Like you said, you know, it's not really a hook, but there are like melodies and just the way that, like I said, there's purpose, you know, in the way that I'm saying things. So that's awesome that you said that, you know, you don't really know where it's going. And hopefully, yeah, that's what we attempted to do.
Now, well, having said all that, if you could only keep one song and throw the rest away, which would it be and why?
It would probably be Slow Burn, to be honest with you, man. You know, it's kind of funny, you know, everyone picks a single because, you know, it's a single, but it really is a representation of who we are and where we want to go. It's funny where we're like, that song was the fastest song that we wrote on the album. It was a fast song that was written lyrically and vocally. Didn't change much after pre-production. So, you know, we felt like we were comfortable with this song, and we just knew that it was right. So I would definitely pick that song for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that you brought that last part up, that it didn't really change much during production. Because my next question is, which song or songs, you know, change the most from the songwriting process to the finished product?
Millennials changed a whole lot. That was the tough one, because we had, I don't know, a dozen different intros to that song. We had a handful of riffs, you know, just like we couldn't get it right, you know, and, we did the best that we could, and pre-production, we had at least probably 80% of it, you know, ready for the studio. And then Chris Galvez, you know, kind of steered us in the right direction. He was a producer of the album. He just steered us in the right direction, and we're like, oh, okay, this is what the song is, you know. And so that definitely was the stubborn one of the album for sure.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you mean there. I'm a musician myself, and sometimes you just get, you know, it's like you can't figure out what to do next with it.
Yeah, and it was that one riff in the beginning of the song that it was originally later in the song. We were like, and Daniel was like, this needs to be the intro. I'm like, nah, dude, no, man, it doesn't work. And then we tried it, and it worked, and it just clicked. And then the rest of the song just kind of came together. Sometimes it just works, you know?
Well, sometimes it takes an outside influence to, I mean, that can see it. You know, somebody that can see the whole picture, you know? Now, with Blacklist, though, it seems like you're trying to tell a story. You were talking earlier about getting the angst out. What messages are you conveying with these songs, and what are you trying to get across with the anger of each of these songs too? Because anger usually is, you know, directed at people to make us listen.
Right. I wouldn't say it's a message as it is more of an outlet. It's more of a, I need to write this down, and if people resonate with my words, then that's great. But at that time, I just needed to write things down so that I don't explode with just anger and with just stress, you know. So each of the songs have their own things to say about what I was going through. For example, Millennials is about being at my age. I'm 26 right now, and still not having, you know, I didn't go to school, you know, I didn't keep that formula of a high school, college, steady job, wife, kids, retirement, you know? And that's what that song is about, was, you know, all my friends and family members are doing that, and I'm still stuck here doing what I love, and I'm okay with it. It sucks to be alone at this time and doing it, but I'm okay with where I am, even if it sucks, because, you know, I feel like that's where I need to be. So just things like that, you know, each song just has their own little outlet for me, you know.
Well, it's good too to have a song like Millennials to open the EP up, because it kind of sets the tone, you know, for everything in a lot of ways. And it's good too that you're able to write a song like that about your generation, because it makes me want to ask you now about your generation. See, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm the generation before you. So because I'm 42 now, so I know that sounds ancient, but here's the thing. I noticed this with my generation, and it's kind of spilled over into yours, that the norm, what you were talking about, the norm, you know, with high school, college, two kids, two 2.5 cars and a mortgage and stuff, that's kind of getting chucked by the wayside slowly but surely. You're starting to see a more nomadic generation, especially with the Millennials.
No, I mean, this generation, you know, a lot of people see it as like the lazy generation,
that's far from it, though. Yeah, but it's far from it.
It is. It's far from it. You know, I feel like we're redefining what it is to be in a civilization, honestly. Like, I find it fascinating how being in a trade, as into being in a career, has shifted. You know, a lot more people are going into trades. A lot of people are trying to be mechanics, or trying to be barbers, or trying to be locksmiths, bartenders, you know, and I find that so, so cool, because, we're doing what feels right to us, you know, and we're not, our parents are there, and they're there to protect you, and there to just, you know, give you advice. You know, doesn't mean that you have to honestly follow it. You know, like they are talking to you from their perspectives and from what they've known. You know, and then for some reason, there is a little something in your mind that's like, but I want to do this. You know, I feel like this is right for me. And we're actually going to that part in our heads. And I feel like we're courageous enough to do it. And I find that so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good that you say that too, because, like what your generation is going through, I think my generation like saw cracks of it. Like, you know, like we saw the very beginning of it, the Gen Xers did. And then I remember my parents, the baby boomers, my parents had the same two jobs for 35 years. You know, those days are gone.
Yeah, man.
You know,
definitely.
You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you remember, like, you know, like the baby boomers, their philosophy was, you know, you had cradle to grave security, and you had one job, that was the job you got right after college or high school. And I mean, me myself, like I said, I'm 42. I've had 8 jobs since 18.
Oh wow!
You know, each one of them a career. You know,
I mean, so.
And what I see with the millennials, I see a more nomadic lifestyle, which is a good thing because it gets people out of the house and it gets people out of the rut.
Yeah, yeah. Trying new things, you know, just going for it. And, you know, what I've noticed, you know, my build for like I'm okay with not having money. It's kind of hard to see it that way, but like, I'm okay with not having a really nice car. I'm okay with not having a big house that's way too big for me. Like, I'm all right with that. You know, I'm okay with just living to my means and just being happy with what I'm doing for the rest of my life. You know,
now, do you think maybe it's because money isn't the main goal anymore?
I honestly do believe that. I do. I feel like it's not the main goal anymore. I feel like the main goal is to pursue that dream that you have and to pursue that goal that you have. And it could be, hey, I'm going to make cupcakes for poor people, you know, for people who just don't want to have a house. I just want to make cupcakes for them, you know, something like that. And you're happy doing that, you know, and if you have money, that's okay. If not, then whatever, you know. And I just find that so cool because we need that right now. We do need that. You know, we need that revival of just like waking up.
Yeah. Humanism is basically what it is.
Right. Yeah.
You know, now let me ask you this. Do you feel that with music in this day and age that is partly why the indie scene is thriving so much and actually in a way overtaking the label scene?
Wait, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Oh, I was just asking, based on your views with what we just talked about, do you think that's partly why the indie scene now is overtaking the music scene in general?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, cause we have the freedom to say what we want. We have the freedom to write the music that we want. And that coincides with our generation. You know, a lot of these major label people are being held by strings, you know, from the people who have money, the suits, you know, the man, you know, they're being controlled by that. And I, you know, for the most part, you know, they have a say, but not really, you know, and I feel like this indie scene has something to say, and I think it definitely resonates to people, you know.
Now, if Capitol or Atlantic or Warner Brothers or, you know, somebody major came up to you and said, I want to sign you guys right away, you know, here's the terms, what would you take it or not?
Like I said, you know, there has to be that freedom, you know. I mean, obviously the exposure is going to be there, you know? But if there's not that freedom where we can do what we want and write what we want to write about, then you can have $1 million, $2 million cash right in front of me. And I'd say no, you know, like it's not worth it. You know, yeah, you're going to be playing Wembley in like 6 months. Sorry, man. Like if I'm going to be, you know, writing about having a nice car and not writing about my generation. And I can't do it. Sorry.
Well, the exposure is there if, you know, and it's a big if they know, or if it can be guaranteed that you're going to go platinum. You know, if they can see that, because one story that I'm thinking about in particular that we of a person we interviewed, I'm not going to mention a name, but I will mention the band Warrant. I know it's a different genre, it's glam metal, but they for their second album, they got a big budget and everything, and when it came out, they had that one major hit, you know, the Cherry Pie or whatever, and then what was it, a year not even a year later, 6 months later, Nirvana and grunge just killed it, and their label told them to go screw off after after all the money spent and everything else, all, you know, it just dried up.
The industry changes, you know, you can't really put a finger on it. You know, it like 2 years ago, you know, the radio was all about, you know, Mumford and Sons and Lumineers and, you know, just that kind of like folk indie stuff. And you don't really hear that on the radio that much anymore. You know, now, you know, it just changes, you know, you can't really do anything about it.
And it also too, if you notice the big hit to the last decade, you know, the manufactured pop bands and, you know, the assembly lines, like the, you know, like American Idol and even The Voice now are kind of just going by the wayside.
Yeah, they are. It's just like, people are changing, you know, their tastes change, you know, like right now, like it's really good time for music, right? Like right now, like the radio, I like listening to the radio. I mean, there's, like, The Weeknd is on. I love that this R&B guy named The Weeknd. That guy's awesome. You know, The Neighborhood, Lord, you know, that kind of just dark pop style is, like, big right now, and I love it because they're talking about stuff that not many people want to talk about, and they have, like, these dark, you know, moods, you know, and with you know, the hooks and stuff, you know, which is awesome, and I'm really liking it, but who says that a year from now it's going to be different, you know?
Yeah, well, it always is different a year from now. I mean,
always,
I always have this philosophy, if an album's still on a chart a year from now, it's going to be a classic 25 years from now.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, you know? I agree.
You know, Well, where do you think Come and Rest fits in with the new music scene? Because we're halfway through the teens decade, and if you notice, that's where you know, music kind of solidifies itself for the rest of the decade into the next. But where do you see Come and Rest fitting in to the music now?
Well, we definitely don't like fitting into the mold that America has with metalcore right now. And we want to kind of, I mean, it's a bold statement coming from a band that no one knows, but we kind of want to redefine like the genre, man. We want to just, you know, pull some feathers and, you know, do something different. You know, I mean, not that Blacklist is really that different, but it does show, an edge that we hope that people will understand, you know, and if they don't, they will. I mean, the stuff that, I mean, we keep on writing and we keep on trying to reinvent, you know, the way that we write personally. I think that's a good thing. You know, like literally we just finished, we finished recording Blacklist and then Daniel had a riff and we started writing. We have like 2.5 songs, 3 songs now, you know, for another album, you know, and, that shows that we constantly want to change, you know, and I feel that other bands should try to do the same because, the music scene right now is really oversaturated with the same thing, and we hope to change that, honestly.
I don't think what you're saying is pompous or anything at all, man. I mean, every, you know, to say you redefine, you know, your goal is to redefine the music scene, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, that's what true leaders say. And if you know, and it's like my father always used to say that every flood starts with one drop of rain.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you can hope for. That's all you can hope for. So,
yeah.
You know, so what is Come and Rest have coming up? I mean, what are your plans? I mean, after Blacklist comes out, you're going to obviously do a tour. So let's talk about that. What are your plans for the rest of the year?
Yeah, we're trying to stay busy. Hopefully release a few more music videos. We have a visualette, which is not a lyric video and not a music video. And it's just a visual representation of the music for one of our singles that's coming out like in a few weeks. And we're going to be touring a lot, man. We actually have a tour planned out in July. That should be really fun. You know, it's going to be our first tour to promote Blacklist. So I'm really excited for that. And then just after that, just a lot more touring, man. Just trying to get out there and just promote the album, you know?
Nice, nice. Now, what is Come and Rest? Where can we find Come and Rest online?
Blacklist.co, B-L-D-C-K, list.co. We have music video up there, all of our links to our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. And we have pre-order packages available now. Our album is available for digital pre-order on iTunes, so please pick that up and check it out and tell people about it. You know, that's it.
And when does Blacklist come out again?
Blacklist comes out May 12th.
May 12th. So, well, thanks, Noel, for being on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.